There was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night folds in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe the lie. Even in this wealthy nation, it could come down to starvation in the twinkling of an eye. They tell us there will soon be peace, our lives will be an endless feast, but they lead us toward the dark. In the distance, sabers rattle, and the armies train for battle as the beast prepares his mark. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string.
Welcome, welcome, Resurrector Republic Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RTR Truth Media Reloaded. Folks, tonight I'm going to share with you a very important interview that I did with a man named David Haig up in the state of Alaska. He is under such intense pressure and has been under pressure for many years with the same case where he was wrongfully convicted. The judiciary is so corrupt. Even the witness in his main trial was escorting the judge around. Folks, you need to hear this interview, and really you need to dig into this. It's AlaskaStateOfCorruption.com, David Haig.
Yes, this is Tom Lacovara Stewart. I am on the line currently with David Haig, a case that was brought against him in the state of Alaska, which is probably one of the worst cases of corruption that I've seen lately outside of the Bundy case. David, we were talking and we got into some heavy details. I'm going to just run this down from the beginning. There was a controversial program to thin some of the wolf population, which the state granted permits to do. We understand that this is a highly controversial program, but you were still following within the confines of the law. As I understand it, even if you were to have done what these folks alleged that you did, which was shoot wolves across a line that they say that you shouldn't have, which you can prove that is not true, not the case, that would not have warranted the persecution that was brought upon you, from what I understand. You were a big game guide, and you've been charged with, what was the crime that you were charged with?
It was same-day airborne hunting of big game as a guide.
Okay.
And just that you know, that's basically the death knell of a guide career.
Okay. I understand that. From what you've told me, this gets really into the same judicial misconduct, similar, just much worse than even the Bundy case that we just covered. So you have an appeals court that apparently is covering up, and there is this ensconced nest network of just a few attorneys. For folks that are going to be listening to this, Alaska is a completely different animal than the other 48 states. We're talking about small communities and very small knit groups of lawyers. This can actually really cause some problems, as you'll see. Can I ask you a question? Did the wolves really actually threaten the big game over this line to the extent that they're alleging?
I don't quite understand. What do you mean threaten?
They said that you had an objective, an agenda, to thin out the wolf herd to benefit your business, which I'm finding to be probably not believable. I don't see is how, even if they were making this argument, which is a false argument because you have evidence, exculpatory evidence that was withheld from the trial, but their argument, their premise to begin with, seems a little bit problematic to me. But, you know, we can move on past that. That doesn't really matter.
Well, and I understand what you're saying is, yeah, you know, whether it would actually do anything, I don't know. You know, but that is what they presented
alleged
to the jury. And,
okay,
you know, like I said, I can prove that where they were saying the wolves were killed, the state's own GPS coordinates prove that that was not the case.
Right, so, and I understand we have some recordings. You have some recordings from officer speaking to a witness who basically confirmed this fact that that they essentially moved the line of the map to convict you.
That's the case, I believe. Well, and it wasn't just the law enforcement. It was the actual prosecutor. There was a meeting with the prosecutor, the main trooper witness against me, and another state witness prior to trial, talking about how they had falsified the map to justify my conviction. And so not only did we not get a copy of the map, as we should have before trial, we didn't get a copy of the recording, as we'd asked for. And so, you know, there was two things that would, you know, prove what had happened.
Right, and this is potentially, well, not potentially, this is exculpatory evidence, so this would be considered Brady violation. Okay, so, all right, so you had a series of attorneys, and why don't you just walk me through attorney 1, 2, 3 kind of quickly.
Okay, attorney 1, and should I use names or not? Or
absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, attorney 1 was, his name was Brent Cole. We hired him because he was supposed to be the best fish and game attorney in Alaska. Right off the bat, he told us that we couldn't bring up that the state was claiming the wolves were killed in my guide area. We couldn't bring up that the state told me to kill them exactly where they were killed. He said I had to plea out to guiding violations, and he also said that, you know, I had to give a statement to the prosecutor. We gave him a 5-hour statement where I put on a map, an aeronautical map, the locations where all the wolves were killed. And, you know, he told us to give up a guiding year for the plea agreement. Well, that plea got broke.
So what you're saying is your attorney advised you that it was a wise decision to sit with law enforcement and prosecutors and give them information for 5 hours, but as I understand it, you had an immunity arrangement with the information that you were giving, and so you're sitting down in this 5-hour interview. Did your attorney ever object to any of these questions that were being asked of you one time?
Nope, he never objected a single time. And see, where it gets, you know, where everybody needs to know what happened is at that time I didn't know what anything meant. I think I told you that after I was convicted, I filed fee arbitration against Brent Cole, and I asked him, why did you have me go in and give a 5-hour statement? And he and an attorney that was working with him at the time both stated that I'd been given immunity, and they actually specifically said transactional immunity, which in Alaska is the only type of immunity allowed to be given, And then what was even more disturbing is when I found out that transactional immunity means that there can be no prosecution about what you talk about. And I was prosecuted for everything. And
after the fact, right?
After the fact, yes. And then, and along with the fact that the attorneys testified that after I had given my statement, the prosecutor, and his name's Scott Leaders, outright told them, guess what? I'm not going to honor David's immunity. Well, how can that happen without them protesting? And see, I only learned all this stuff after I'm convicted. And, you know, I now have my suspicions. Well, I'll put it this way, that when we were asking for the plea agreement to be enforced, Brent Cole kept saying over and over, I can't do anything and enforce it. And then finally, at one point, he said, and there was a bunch of witnesses to this, and I think we may have this tape recorded, he said, I can't do anything to piss Leaders off, and Leaders is a prosecutor, because after your case is done, I still have to be able to make deals with him.
So he admitted that he was going light on, in your defense for the benefit of another case unrelated to yours. That's
correct.
That's a peach.
Yep.
That's a real
peach. That's why we now realize that he didn't, that's almost certainly why he didn't file motions to suppress evidence when every single warrant that they used to search my house, seize my airplane, take away our computers and, you know, phones and you know, cameras and everything, every one of those warrants and affidavits supporting the warrants falsely claimed the wolves were killed in my guide area. And as I told you, in the same document, in the same thing from the state, they had the GPS coordinates of where the wolves were found, and the GPS coordinates prove that they were lying about where the wolves were found.
Right, I saw the map, and I saw the map area where you gave them, quite honestly, and I don't believe that you were trying to hide anything. You seem like an honest man to me. You were trying to, you know, you gave them the location. They didn't dispute the actual location where the wolves were killed. They just moved the line of the map to make it a crime. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
And we have this really on recording, and you have some transcripts, which we're going to be showing at this point, so people can get a grasp of this. I witnessed these maps myself, and it seems to me rather obvious in combination with the recording and with the maps that this was a deliberate a concoction, a fabrication of false evidence to convict you. And apparently, you through this process, and we're going to try and do this kind of quickly, through these first two attorneys that essentially were part of this very kind of small-knit, good old boys network that looked out for each other, you happened upon a third attorney, which you had a kind of good idea to get, which is he was a business attorney, and who was, at first, he had said, and you have also on recording, that your criminal attorney sold you out. Do you have that on recording?
Yes. Well,
okay.
I have, you know, when we got suspicious, and it was because of our business attorney, when the criminal attorneys, what they were telling us didn't make sense, we approached our business attorney, who was a former criminal defense attorney, and went to him, and he was so disturbed that we ended up going to the FBI and presenting this stuff to the FBI, and they confirmed that they're getting more and more complaints, exactly like what we were saying, that criminal defense attorneys are turning on their own clients and helping state prosecutors and troopers convict their own clients. And that was, the FBI guy, he was a section chief named Colton Seale, S-E-A-L-E, and that was many years ago. And so, yeah, and then
the third attorney's name, his name is Dale Delifka, and so his statement was, your criminal attorney sold you out, and every warrant apparently was falsified, and you know, the original, what is it, the first or the second attorney said that there was nothing that they could do about it. No motion to suppress was filed. No challenge was made upon their evidence. And this is what led Dale DeLifka to say that your criminal attorneys essentially just sold you out. Is that correct?
That is correct. And then there was a third criminal attorney we hired, Mark Osterman, that because of what our business attorney had said, we tape recorded Mark Osterman. Basically, I mean, every conversation I believe we had with him, we recorded. And we did it, you know, with little tape recorders in our pockets and stuff. And he's the one that when he looked at the evidence of what the first two attorneys had done, we have him tape recorded saying, it's the biggest sellout of a client I've ever seen by not one, but two attorneys. And that, quote, you didn't know they, meaning the first two attorneys, were going to rig the dang dice so the state would always win. And that's, you know, a pretty much exact quote from him. And then he's the one that, you know, as he, you know, he said he'd immediately get my conviction overturned and that we were going to sue our first two attorneys. We started writing the brief, and then about, I don't know, a month in, he refused to talk to me or let me in his office. And I finally had to tell him that if I didn't see the brief and see what was going on, I was going to fire him. And that's where went in, looked at the brief. He'd removed all of the incriminating stuff, and we recorded him saying that he removed it all because he couldn't do anything that would affect the lives and livelihoods of my first two attorneys. And so
it sounds to me like he was threatened. That's what it sounds like to me. That's kind of obvious to me.
Yeah, and that's what we feel now, too. And so, you know, and after Mark Osterman, I started representing myself. And
how old was this, if you don't mind me asking, how old was this attorney that said this?
Mark Osterman?
Yes.
I don't know, but he's died since. I think he was, you know, maybe like 55 or so then. I think he died here, you know, not too long ago.
And do you know the circumstances? Do you know the circumstances of his death?
I do not, but I think it was down in the States, and I don't really, you know, I don't really have any suspicions of, you know, that he.
Just curious.
Yeah.
It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just a curiosity.
Well, one of the strange things that's happened here, and you know, maybe I shouldn't bring this up now, is my second attorney, Chuck Robinson. Because there's this remand that basically focuses on minor things, but they're all around him. He's now, and I've talked to him. He said that you know, they're basically, you know, throwing him under the bus to cover up for everybody else. Well, he's the one that filed the discovery request, and I tape recorded him. I showed him the map. I showed him his discovery request, showed him the map. He said, yep, I filed this discovery request. Yep. I should have got a copy of this map. I did not. I showed him, you know, where the prosecutor, trooper, and other witness were talking about how the map had been falsified and how they were talking about the wolves were not killed in my guide area. And then I asked him, I'm like, would you have done anything different had you had this discovery? And a close quote of what he said is, yes, I would have. I would have been able to prove that they were intentionally falsifying evidence to use against you. I could prove that they were intentionally lying at trial. And he said, and I would have had their motive for them to do so, which was to, you know, charge me as a guide. And so I got that recorded here recently. Basically, my second attorney is giving me, you know, confirming my fears of what happened as long as it throws the light of suspicion away from him. You know, he's willing to talk about anything that anybody else did wrong now because he doesn't want to talk about what he also did wrong.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
My God. Okay, so, my God.
He also did wrong.
My God. Okay, so, these recordings, I'm going to tell people right here on an open mic so everyone knows, I'll have within the end of the day. So, I will just want to let that be known so that protects you, because I fear the animal that you're facing is a very big animal. So these recordings are going to be sent to state representatives, and if anything does befall you, this information is already going to be in the hands of officials who will do something about it. But go ahead. Okay. Continue on.
Well, and just so everybody knows, that one of the meetings we had with Chuck Robinson, my second attorney, was attended by the chief of staff of my state senator, and that senator is Peter Michicki. The staff member was, God, how come I can't think of his name here right now, but anyway, he sat in on the meeting with Chuck Robinson when Chuck Robinson was going over the things that the prosecutor and trooper had done in not, you know, providing us the map and the recording. And the, Peter Michicki's guy that was with us, his name is Conrad Jackson. So anyway, you know, we were kind of getting to where, you know, it's starting to come out. One thing that, you know, if you got time that's pretty interesting is I'd been allowed to call Chuck Robinson during a an evidentiary hearing to question him on how he represented me, you know, at trial and didn't enforce plea agreements and et cetera, et cetera. So I filed a motion with the judge that's now handling this case. It's Judge William Morse. And this is something that did scare me, Tom, incredibly. I filed the motion saying, when can I have my evidentiary hearing to question Chuck Robinson, because Chuck Robinson is now confirming that the prosecutor and trooper intentionally tampered with evidence, intentionally committed perjury, and I want this on the record. Judge Morse sent back an order saying, we have just learned that Chuck Robinson is deceased, and he will no longer be available to question at a hearing.
Okay, so much for my not having a conspiracy theory angle.
Well, the funny part, or I need to tell you this, though. So I'm running around here. I actually called Senator Machicki's office in Juneau, because when I talked to my brother, you know, I thought that they had offed him. You know, my brother's like, well, if they did, you don't want the state doing the autopsy. You would want the federal government to do it, because if the state, you know, killed a witness, it's, you know, whatever. Well, so anyway, I put this out on Facebook, and it's going everywhere, and I had taken a picture, you know, people can see it. It's on our webpage, Alaska State of Corruption, the order from the judge. Well, later that day, I get a call, and it's from Chuck Robinson, the guy that the judge had declared dead. And so he is still alive, and I just got yesterday, I filed a motion for reconsideration, and the judges, you know, admitted he was wrong, and, you know, there were, and so, anyway, you know, it's something that happened that did really scare the hell out of me for the better part of a day until, you know, we learned that, you know, Mr. Robinson was still alive.
In other words, nice try for the curveball, Judge.
Yeah, yep. Well, and it, you know, and at this point, I still have briefing to finish and stuff, and I'm, you know, like I said, pretty disturbed at what's happened. And I mean,
what was this judge's name that declared this man prematurely dead?
His name is Judge William Morse. He's the same one that stood there and watched the state troopers tase me when I was trying to present the map and the transcriptions. That's what I had in my hand when the troopers tased me when I was in court. I was trying to present the map that had been altered, and I was trying to present the transcriptions. And then to eliminate the map and the transcriptions from an evidentiary hearing, the Court of Appeals order had said that I'd never briefed them. I'd never given them, you know, the evidence that anything was wrong. Well, we also had a laptop computer with a video of oral arguments to the Court of Appeals where I had the state actually brought in the original trial map to oral arguments to the Court of Appeals. And there's a video of me going up to the map saying, this is the map used against me at trial. Here are the lines that the state falsified to convict me. And this is, you know, you have to do something. Well, now, 3 years after that, the Court of Appeals said I never did that. And so I don't get an evidentiary hearing on the map. And that's why we know that's why we're so scared,
right?
Is even the Court of Appeals is involved in the cover-up.
Wow. Okay, and, you know, I saw at one point that you were tased in the courtroom. How many years had you been involved into this when that incident happened?
Over 13 years.
So after 13 years of being lied on and after having your business destroyed, economically terrorized by color of law, you finally said enough is enough. And you were adamant, but you were composed. You
are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendolite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendolite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down, and, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
You finally sent enough is enough, and you were adamant, but you were composed. You were certainly no threat to anyone when you were tased.
Well, yeah. At that point, in law, and you seem to know a fair amount about law. In law, when you find out about an error, you are obligated to protest it and bring it up at the first opportunity. Because if you don't, the other side can claim you waived your right, because basically the courts don't want to continue with a process that you knew was flawed way back when, and in essence they're expending all these resources, time, and money on a proceeding that is flawed. And to make sure that they don't waste all those resources, they make you protest errors that you find out about. And so this hearing was the first one at which I could protest the Court of Appeals lying about the fact that I had not presented the false map to them. And so that's why I had the map in my hand and was saying this map was falsified, and I have proof that I presented this to the Court of Appeals, making their ruling that I hadn't fraudulent, and we shouldn't follow it. But see, Judge Morse, who is the judge that it got remanded to, and actually it wasn't remanded to him. He took it, I believe, corruptly, but that's a whole other story. But so anyway, to him, I was basically telling him, your order from your bosses is fraudulent, and I can prove it is, and I don't want to go forward on it. I want to go forward on what is truth and what I can prove. And he outright said, no, we're going to go forward on this order and in essence said, I don't care if it's been falsified or not. But, you know, as we just talked about, that recording proving that the trooper, prosecutor, and their other witness were talking about how the map had been falsified to justify my conviction, and because I'd presented that to the Court of Appeals, that's, I have every right, because that would overturn my conviction and give me back my life. I have a right to litigate that, and they're saying I don't get to litigate it, and here's the reason why. You never brought it up. But in fact, there's a video, and you know, it may be good, Tom, for you and everybody, that video is on YouTube, and it's you could just video David Haig, or YouTube David Haig and Alaska Court of Appeals, and it should come up. And I think it's David Haig versus State of Alaska, Alaska Court of Appeals. And it shows me going right up to the map and saying, this is the map used against me at trial. Here's the boundaries the state intentionally falsified to convict me, and I want something done. And now, you know, 3 years later, the Court of Appeals finally ruled and said, I never brought that up, so I don't get to litigate it. It's crazy.
I would say that's beyond crazy. So, okay, I think that we've covered enough of that evidence to get the people that I'm going to be giving this to interested. I want to get now into the judge that was flown in. Can you tell me a little bit about Trooper Gibbons and the judge that was flown in?
Sure. My trial took place in McGrath, population 300 people. My courtroom was an Iditarod sled dog race checkpoint.
Oh, God.
Because there's no judges in McGrath, the judge, Margaret Murphy, had to fly in from Antioch to McGrath. And because there's no public transportation, you know, 300 people total. She's picked up at the runway by Trooper Gibbons.
And Trooper Gibbons is the principal witness in your case against you,
yes,
right?
Principal witness against me, who's, we have a recording of him falsifying the map, falsifying testimony against me at trial. And during the whole trial, and as a week-long trial, the judge stayed in the same bed and breakfast as we did, the McGrath B&B. And while we had to walk down the little dirt road about a mile to the courthouse, Trooper Gibbons would give Judge Murphy rides to and from, and whenever she needed to go anywhere for
anything,
errands, anything. And when Gibbons would get to the McGrath B&B, he would usually have breakfast with the judge, you know, and so we'd be watching that. And anyway, in my
Because, you know, judges all the time, everywhere, and have breakfast and are escorted by a principal witness in the case. Sure, that's just, you know, part of course, I suppose.
Well, it was in my case. Anyway,
wow.
You know, after I get convicted, I think I told you I filed a complaint with the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct against, you know, against my trial judge, Margaret Murphy, and my complaint was that she was eating and riding full time, being chauffeured everywhere by the main witness against me. And like I told you, at this point, my evidence that I was shooting the wolves where I was told by the state got removed out of the court record while there's a cover letter proving the evidence had been properly admitted. And so the court record was in Judge Murphy's hands, you know, while my evidence goes missing. So anyway, I filed this complaint with the commission. It's investigated by the commission's only investigator for the past 28 years, and her name is Marla Greenstein. And because of everything that had happened, you know, and this was, you know, after I was convicted, so I was kind of suspicious. So I tape recorded my conversations with Marla Greenstein. After about when I filed the complaint, she asked for a list of witnesses, and so I drove to Anchorage and gave her a list of witnesses and had them date stamp, you know, receiving it. And then about a year goes by, and I call her back and ask her what happened with my complaint, and she tells me that she contacted all four of my witnesses, and none of them seen the chauffeuring, And because of that, she, you know, dropped the complaint against my trial judge. Well,
wow, that's
when my
that's a great yeah, right it, there. Who do you
well,
who
it,
can
it,
you
it,
complain
it,
to about her? She there's only
well,
one of her. Does she have a
yeah,
supervisor?
Virtually, well, she has a you know a commission that's above her. But you know, if I can take your time a little more time, let me just explain kind of what happened in the interim. I file for post-conviction relief complaining about my trial judge riding around with the trooper who's the main witness against me while my evidence gets removed out of the court record. The state of Alaska says David Hegg's trial judge should be the judge of his post-conviction relief. She should decide the complaint against herself. And I'm like, how can that be?
That's
well,
insane.
I file to remove her. She denies it. Judge Murphy says, no, I can investigate myself impartially. But luckily, Tom, this is where I caught a break. In Alaska, when you file a motion to disqualify a judge for cause, it has to be reviewed by an independent judge, you know, if that judge, you know, doesn't recuse himself. In my case, that was assigned to Superior Court Judge Stephanie Joannides. Miss Joannides, or Judge Joannides, says, Mr. Hegg, I want any and all evidence that Judge Murphy cannot now be your post-conviction relief judge, along with having been your trial judge. So I go back, Tom, to all four witnesses who I had given to Marla Greenstein like a year earlier, and I say, hey, I know you told Marla that you didn't see this chauffeuring, but I'm just going to ask again because I seen it and I thought you guys seen it. Every single one of them wrote an affidavit that Marla Greenstein or no one had ever contacted them about the chauffeuring and that they all remembered the chauffeuring exactly like I had complained of.
My Lord.
So
does the corruption ever end anywhere?
Not that I can see yet. And
well, I think you appropriately named your website Alaska State of Corruption.
Yeah. And so anyway, and then my wife's going through the tape recordings of my trial and sentencing, and in one of the proceedings, it catches the judge and trooper laughing about the judge says, oh, I got to go get some more coke, and since I don't have any transportation here, I'm going to commandeer Trooper Gibbons, and we're going to go get me some coke. That's actually recorded in the complaint process, you know, when Marla first investigated, the judge
Jesus.
Murphy, swore out an affidavit that she never got a ride from Trooper Gibbons. Yet now even the court recordings record her commandeering the trooper to go get pop and stuff. But so anyway, you know, Judge Joannides.
Okay, we're talking about Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
but it's still a ride, and she still admitted that. So she's essentially she's committed perjury herself.
Yeah,
oh my God.
Yep. And you know, and Judge Joannides, she says, well, we're going to have an evidentiary hearing on what happened. Judge Joannides allows me to subpoena Judge Murphy, allows me to subpoena the prosecutor, allows me, I don't even have to subpoena Trooper Gibbons. Judge Joannides orders the state to produce him. Judge Joannides allows me to subpoena all three of my attorneys. She allows me to subpoena all four witnesses that I'd given to Marla Greenstein. Everyone, other than my witnesses, or the witnesses to the chauffeuring, all lawyer up with Judge Murphy and one of the other state secretaries I had subpoenaed, hiring Peter Mawson, who's now an Alaska Supreme Court justice, to defend them against my subpoenas. Judge Joannides orders Marla Greenstein, the judicial conduct investigator, to produce her investigative report into her investigation of Judge Murphy and Trooper Gibbons riding around together. Marla Greenstein refuses to produce the investigative report. Now, you figure that one out.
Oh, how convenient.
On the day that I'm supposed to have the evidentiary hearing, where I can now maybe prove everything in my whole case, we get up to Anchorage, and Judge Ioannidi says, I'm canceling the evidentiary hearing. Because you've already proved, without it, that there is the appearance of impropriety of Judge Murphy at a minimum. And she says, in her ruling, she says that there will be an evidentiary hearing for you to prove all this. Well, guess, Tom, what one of the items that the Alaska Court of Appeals has eliminated from me being able to litigate because I never brought it up?
The very thing that you brought up, that you can prove that you brought up and that they're saying you didn't, the map.
Yeah, no, that with the map and stuff, but also I don't get to litigate Marla Greenstein falsifying the investigation. They said I never gave any proof on that one. To eliminate that one, the Court of Appeals says that Mr. Head gave no evidence of corruption in Marla Greenstein or the commission.
You didn't need to give evidence of corruption because you made the accusation and it went unanswered, and a judge ruled that there was, that you had more than sufficiently shown that there was an appearance of impropriety.
But they also said that there was no evidence, and I had given them, the Court of Appeals, Judge Ioannidi, after she scuttled the, and she, Judge Ioannidi said, made this statement, Mr. Haig, your concerns are going to be addressed. She said she just didn't want them to come out in her proceeding, which was just to decide whether Murphy should be, the presiding over my post-conviction relief. And she said she didn't want to have to transfer all the evidence. Well, see, after Judge Ioannidi did that, at some point, she had her staff certify the transcriptions my wife had made of Marla Greenstein, stating that she'd contacted all the witnesses and, blah, blah, blah. And then, Judge Ioannidi had in hand all the affidavits of the witnesses saying they hadn't been contacted and that they, all seen the chauffeuring. Well, Judge Ioannidi took that packet, Tom, and sent it to the Alaska Department of Law, to the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct, to the Bar Association, even to Alaska's ombudsman. I don't know if you know who an ombudsman is.
Yeah, I do. I do. So she was really trying to help you.
Yeah. And the commission, when they got her referral, I asked them, did you do anything? They said, no, we've determined it is not genuine.
Really? Oh. So they can listen to judges when it suits them, and they can ignore judges when it doesn't.
Yeah.
Nice.
And
nice. And
because I'm, you had asked, does Marla Greenstein have a boss? She does. It's the commission. It's made up of three judges, three attorneys, and three public people. They meet, I think, quarterly, once every 3 months. Their rules say that they encourage public testimony on anything that has to do with the commission's duties or, that concerns the commission. Me and I think all the witnesses who Marla Greenstein had falsified contacting, the commission's rules said that you have to apply to testify during their meetings, 48 hours in advance.
I would question the constitutionality of having to apply to testify because you're guaranteed the right to give redress of grievances regardless of permission slips. But that's just a side note.
Okay, side note aside. We apply way before the 48-hour notice. They deny us. They say they won't let us testify. I said your rules specifically say you encourage public testimony on anything to do, and I said, we are all going to testify that your only investigator for 28 years is falsifying official investigations to cover up for corrupt judges. They're like, nope, you ain't going to testify. I tell them, well, we're going to show up anyway because I got the date and time and location. Guess what met us at the door, Tom?
Guns?
A trooper SWAT team.
I hit that nail on the head.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're talking about, what you're talking about is essentially what the RICO statutes were created to combat organized crime with. This is a corrupt organization from, seems like, top to bottom.
Yeah, well, and Dale DeLifka, I should explain that during the evidentiary hearing with Judge Ioannidis, I had also subpoenaed Dale DeLifka, my business attorney. And although there was no evidentiary hearing on whether, you know, on the thing with the judge riding around with the trooper, Judge Ioannidis did allow me to have a representation hearing on whether I knowingly, voluntarily, and whatever the other one is, represented myself. And I said I wanted to prove that I am knowingly doing it and intelligently, I think is the other one. But I said I want to prove that it's anything but voluntarily. And I questioned Dale DeLifka. Remember, this is the same attorney that went to the FBI with me that helped me understand what was going on when I thought I was going crazy. And Dale DeLifka, under oath in my case, testified pretty close to this. It's absolute, unadulterated, self-bred corruption, and it will go on and get worse until the sleeping giant wakes up. And he said, he said the Court of Appeals cannot do the right thing in your case, because if they do, the judges will go down, the troopers will go down, and the attorneys will go down. And that's sworn testimony from Dale DeLifka, who's practiced law in the state for, I think, 35 years.
Well, you know, there was a young man who was standing up that was seeking to do something about that. His name was Schaefer Cox. I don't know if you're familiar with Schaefer Cox, but he's in the middle of a political prison. He's in a prison within a prison because he stood opposed to this type of corruption, and they set him up. Do you know the name of these FBI agents that you spoke to? Do you have their information?
I don't have current information, but Colton Seal, and like I said, it's Colton, Colton Seale, yep. And then we actually talked to another guy, FBI agent, another section chief. His name was Doug Klein, it's K-L-E-I-N. And we went to him when, and I don't know how much time I got with you here. I also, this is important though, I also went and filed a bar complaint against Marla Greenstein, the judicial conduct investigator, because she's an attorney.
Right.
And because I filed that, she had to respond in a verified document, so under penalty of perjury. And in her document, she says that not only she didn't just contact my witnesses, she also contacted my trial attorney, which was Chuck Robinson. Well, she knew, Marla knew me and Chuck were at each other's throats because I figured out he'd sold us out. Well, I still had Chuck's cell phone number, so I just called Chuck up, and I got my little tape recorder running. And I say, hey, Chuck, Marla Greenstein, judicial conduct investigator, she said that she contacted you about Judge Murphy riding around with Trooper Gibbons. Chuck says, no one ever contacted me, and I remember Trooper Gibbons and Judge Murphy riding around together during their trial.
Oh, well, good Lord, more evidence.
I've deposed Chuck Robinson, and under oath he has confirmed that Marla Greenstein never contacted him. So, you know, when I complained that she had contacted every witness, you know, in the bar thing, Marla figured she had to come up with some witness that would back her up. So she pulled Chuck Robinson out of the air, thinking that he would back her up because I'm now trying to prove Chuck Robinson sold me out. Well, Chuck Robinson actually did the right thing, told the truth. And so now Marla is not only guilty of falsifying the investigation of my trial judge and witness against me running around together, she's now guilty, as you realize, perjury to cover up.
Right.
Well, when we got that, as soon as we got that, that's when I decided it was time to go down to the local FBI store in Anchorage again. We go in there, and this time we talk to the guy named Doug Kline, K-L-I-N-E, or no, K-L-I-E-N, and we run him through the process. And we have the certified documents from Judge Ioannidis of what Marla's saying. We have the bar complaint against Marla, and then we have Marla's certified response. And then I had a CD with Chuck Robinson's voice on it saying Marla never contacted me, and I remember the, you know, judge riding around with the trooper. So we give all this to FBI agent Kline, and he tells us it's obvious why she falsified the investigation of your trial judge. And I'm like, why? He says no one would believe you got a fair trial if the judge was riding around with the main witness against you. And so, you know, that's where we're at. And, you know, I now, you know, Dale DeLifka's right that the Court of Appeals has to keep this under wraps, because just think of it. I asked Marla how many complaints she gets. She gets, I think, about, if I remember right, about 20 complaints a month. You do 20 complaints against judges a month, times 12 months, times 28 years, and she's the only investigator. You do the math of how many corrupt judges may be sitting on the bench just because of Marla Greenstein.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's why, you know, when I got tased and it got on Facebook and I was complaining, that's why there's so many people in Alaska saying the same thing happened to them. I think it is, the word is systemic. I think it's just, it's like Dale DeLifka said, it's absolute unadulterated self-bred corruption.
It's an organized crime organization.
It is, yeah. And yeah, I, you know, other people told me that quite a while ago. Yeah, all the people that are tasked with investigating the lower people are in on it. And
well, you know, my question is, again, and I know that, that the FBI, you know, in some cases, you know, serial killers and all of that, there's, I know that there's a lot of great folks in the FBI, but I also know from this Bundy situation that there's also not. And it seems to me, you know, why do we even have an FBI at all if this kind of rampant, obvious and blatant corruption can thrive right under their noses while they're persecuting people for their political beliefs and, you know, very traditional views on constitution and patriotism? These folks are being targeted. You wonder why? I just want to go on record here for saying to those of you out there that wonder why people switch from this the concept of this style of governing to a sovereignty defense.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.